Erica, are you on?
Excellent. Thank you. Welcome to the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources for April 19th, 2011. I will let you know, so folks who are here in the audience know what bills are going to be up today and not, and what will be carried over. So we're going to go through this first, and we are actually going to do our work sessions first, and then we will have our public hearings on Senate Bill 942 and the carryover from last week, Senate Bill 960. So we are carrying over Senate Bill 688. We don't have the paperwork for that. We are carrying over Senate Bill 945, the work session. We're still waiting for all the paperwork on that. Do we have the paperwork in 862, or are we going to carry that over?
Okay.
We are carrying over Senate Bill 941. We're going to have a work session just to hear from the Department of Justice about the amendment. We're carrying over Senate Bill 536, carrying over Senate Bill 82, and we will be working Senate Bill 805.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
You going through the list, what did you say was the final 862?
It's ready to go.
Yeah, we do have the paperwork on that. So we're going to go ahead and open up
right before you do that,
work sessions.
I understand there are five bills you're carrying over. Did you want to put on the record what your carryover and all that, just to make sure it's clear?
Yeah, I did, and I'll do it again before we close the hearing.
Said that you're carrying over till Thursday.
Oh, sorry. Okay, so again, we are carrying over Senate Bill 688 until next Thursday.
This Thursday.
Well, yeah, Thursday. What's the date?
21st.
April 21st. Carrying over Senate Bill 829 until the 21st of April. Carrying over Senate Bill 536 until the 21st of April. Work session on Senate Bill 882 will also be carried over until the 21st of April. And work session on Senate Bill 960. We're going to continue the public hearing today.
And
945. And that's all until April 21st, which is this Thursday. It's just the same as next Thursday.
And 941 and 536 are just Thursday also?
Yes. Everything else is, everything that I mentioned earlier is all being carried over until Thursday. Okay? So with that, we're going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 805. And we have a new amendment, Beth, so if you can provide us with an overview, that would be helpful.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, in your package should be the Dash 12 amendment, as well as a fiscal statement and a no revenue impact statement. The Dash 12s are identical to the Dash 11s, which were out last week, I believe. The only difference is there's an additional word in the caption heading, so there's really no substantive difference between the 11s and 12s.
Okay. And so we have our revenue impact, and so
we have everything you need.
Okay. For this to go down to Ways and Means, correct?
Yes.
All righty. So before I ask for a motion, I'm going to see, does anybody have any questions that they would want? We have Ryan from the Senate President's Office, and we have the Oregon Humane Society. Any questions? Do we want to have any of these folks come up? Okay, so with that, I will go ahead and open up a work session, Senate Bill 805 on the Dash 12s.
Briefly. Chair Dingfelder, I move to adopt the Senate Bill 805-12, amendments dated 4-14-11.
Okay, Senator Olson moves to adopt the Senate Bill 805-12, amendments dated 4-14-11. Is there any discussion? Any objections to these amendments? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Dingfelder, I move Senate Bill 805 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, Senator Olson moves Senate Bill 805 as amended with the Dash 12s to the floor with a due pass recommendation and it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Prozonsky.
Can we just get clarification on the 12s? I'm assuming it has the benchmarks in it.
Yes, I'm going to. Ryan, will you come up and talk about that, please.
I think I see it on the description of the fiscal impact.
Do you want to go ahead and talk about the conversion goals and what was added?
Sure.
Starts on page 7.
members of the committee. My name is Ryan Mann, policy analyst in the Office of the Senate President. Would you like me to talk overall about the amendment or just specifically the benchmarks?
Well, what the differences are.
In the Dash 12
amendment, is different.
Amendment, a series of benchmark goals were added to the bill that would say that by 2020, 25% of cages operated in Oregon should be at the American Humane Association husbandry guideline standards for enriched colony cage systems, and that by 2023, 65% of cages shall meet that same standard. These are to be included in the business plans that commercial egg producers put forward, as well as in the reports from the Department of Ag that will be presented annually to the Legislative Assembly. This will be a means for legislators and the public and the department to track the progress of conversion and revisit the issue if benchmarks aren't being met.
Madam Chair.
Follow up.
Just one clarification to understand the dates of when the cages have to change. I'm assuming that when those changes take place on those years, that the density that would be optimal for those cages also go into effect. In other words, you cannot overstuff the cages with additional hens.
Right. Chair Dinkfelder, Senator Brzezanski, after January 1, 2017, all cages that had been installed after January 1, 2012 would have to be operated at the enriched colony system standard, including the standard for density. So
fair enough.
That'll be the case for all cages as of 2017 that were newly installed. So that will also be the case for 25 and then 65% of cages.
Thank you very much.
Okay. And just to clarify, so these goals will also be part of the plans that have to be developed in conjunction with the Department of Agriculture. Is that correct?
Chair Dinkfelder, that's correct.
And if these goals aren't met, then what?
Well, Chair Dinkfelder, there is no kind of enforcement of these goals, but because they are included in the business plans and in the reports, there will be both. It'll be public that the goals haven't been met, and then the ultimate date of January 1, 2026 is when all cages will have to be at 100% operation. So if they're not meeting these guidelines, it seems unlikely they will reach the 100% anyway, and that's when penalties will be enforced for any cages that don't meet that standard.
Okay, so I'm reading on page 9, lines 4 through 6, which is the penalties provision.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that's where that would apply.
Yes, Chair Dinkfelder, after 2026, any violation of the husbandry standards, including the density, will result in up to a $2,500 violation.
Okay. All right, any other questions on the Dash 12s? Okay, we do have a motion. I will ask for the clerk to call the roll, please.
Aye.
Senator Thompson?
Aye.
Senator Olson?
Aye.
Chair Dinkfelder?
Aye. The motion passes. The bill is sent as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means, and we will not assign a carrier because that will be done down in Ways and Means. The work session on Senate Bill 805 is closed. We'll open up a work session on
862. Wait a second. Hens are leaving.
Hens are leaving, yeah.
Okay.
Remind me so I can say all these
okay.
at the end.
Yeah.
Say, we're going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 862. Beth, do we have an amendment? We don't have an amendment for this, do we?
There is an amendment, yes. In your packet, there is a dash 2 amendment.
Okay, that just, yeah.
I believe at the meeting on the 5th, there was a dash 1 amendment discussed. The difference between that and the dash 2 is that it removes the non-compete clause in the contract provision in the very beginning of the bill. So there is a dash 2 amendment. There is a fiscal statement in your packet, and I believe no revenue impact.
And what's the difference between the dash 1 and the dash 2?
Just the deletion of the non-compete clause.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's the same.
Okay. Got it. All righty. And then the fiscal on this, we have a
fiscal statement.
Right. So making sure we have all of our paperwork. And so this does not need to go to Ways and Means, is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. Okay, so with that, I'd be happy to take a motion. Do you want to make a motion on that?
Sure.
Just with the dash twos. Yeah, let's see if we can do this on your own.
I can, right here. Chair Dinkfelder, I move to adopt the SB 862-2 amendments dated 4-12-11.
Okay, Senator Olson moves to adopt the dash two amendments into Senate Bill 862. Is there any objection? Any discussion? Okay. Seeing no objection, amendments are adopted.
Chair Dinkfelder, I move Senate Bill 862 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Senator Olson moves Senate Bill 862 as amended with the dash twos to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Senator
Haas? Aye.
Senator Bronski?
Aye.
Senator Thompson?
Aye.
Senator Olson?
Aye.
Aye. That the motion passes, and Senator Berger has requested to carry this bill since it's her bill, so we'll assign Senator Berger to carry that. Close the work session on Senate Bill 862, and we have, I think, one more, right? Senate Bill 600?
Mm-hmm.
So we will go ahead and open up work session on Senate Bill 600. And if you could go ahead and talk about the amendments.
Madam Chair, the dash 2 amendments are in your packet. These are the amendments that deal with modifying provisions related to the lease of submersible and submerged lands. There is a minimal expenditure impact statement on the dash 2, no revenue impact. That's it. I believe the dash 2s were in front of you during the hearing.
Okay, and I'm wondering if we have, it's Department of State Lands here. I don't know.
Yep, one is here.
Okay, Louise, do you want to come up and just say something about the dash twos? Okay, and I'll go ahead. Well, we're in work session, so you want to make a motion?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I move the dash twos into Senate Bill 600.
Okay, Senator Przanski moves to adopt Senate Bill 600, the dash 2 amendments, dated 3-2-11. And I've asked Louise just to come up and remind us what the dash 2s do.
Madam Chair, two things with the dash 2s. It corrects a drafting error in the original bill in Section 1 where there was a not added. And so in order to clarify where the preference right lies with the upland owner and the lessee, we broke that into two sections in order to make it clearer. And then the second piece of the amendment simply clarifies the language related to voluntary habitat restoration projects being exempt from compensation to the Common School Fund and put some exemptions to that exemption from compensation for projects that are not truly voluntary in nature. They're either required as mitigation, required for remediation related to remediate cleanup activities and those sorts of things. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Any questions on this amendment? Okay. Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll then, since we are in a work session.
On the dash ones.
On the dash twos.
Aye.
Senator Blumke?
Aye.
Senator Thompson?
Aye.
Senator Olson?
Aye.
With that, the dash twos are adopted. And
Madam Chair,
the motion.
I move Senate Bill 600 as amended by the dash twos to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Senator Prezonsky moves Senate Bill 600 with the dash twos to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Haas?
Aye.
Senator Prezonsky?
Aye.
Senator Thompson?
Aye.
Senator Olson?
Aye.
With that, the motion carries, and I'm wondering, why don't we ask Senator Johnson if she would like to carry the bill, and I will be a backup if she does not.
Okay.
And I think that's it for the work session today, is that correct?
I believe so.
Berger's the carrier on 862.
Yes, Berger's the carrier. Close the work session on Senate Bill 600. And I think we're right on time to open up the public hearing on which will be very, very short. And then we will continue 960. I know there were some folks who didn't get to testify. So we're going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 942. And Beth, if you can provide an explanation. Mm-hmm. We're going to do yours last.
Members, Senate Bill 942 directs the Department of Administrative Services to adopt and annually update plan by which state agencies must implement goals related to sustainability. There is a dash one amendment in your packet which removes the second section of the bill which would have required agencies to purchase 20% less paper. There is a dash one revenue notice of no revenue impact as well. We do not have a fiscal impact statement on the dash one.
Okay, and I believe this bill was brought to us by the Secretary of State from the Sustainability Board, who I think we have here. Come on up. And then I grab the sheet. She did. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Kate Brown, Chair of the Oregon Sustainability Board. I also serve as Oregon Secretary of State. The Board's chief mission is to advocate for sustainable practices both within state government and in the private sector as well. We have a fairly diverse membership, which includes Judge Mark Webb from Grant County, VP of Operations at Harry and David, Pete Krotz, and Dr. Robin Collin at Willamette University Law School. She is the Professor of Sustainability. Since the creation of the board in 2001, a number of agencies have developed sustainability plans, including the Department of Administrative Services. The bill places the Department of Administrative Services in the leadership role of overseeing the development and implementation of state agency sustainability plans. Madam Chair, the board asked that we draft this legislation because it would ensure that sustainability would continue to be a priority for state agencies, and it creates a statutory obligation. The agencies should already be doing much of this work already through multiple prior executive orders. Thank you.
Members next.
Chairwoman Dingfelder and members of the committee, thank you for letting me testify on Senate Bill 942. For the record, my name is Ellen Shepard. I worked for the Department of Administrative Services for 15 years, most of the last decade, saving costs on utility boards as resource conservation manager and sustainability coordinator. The Department of Administrative Services owns and operates about 3 million square feet of primarily office space, and in 2000, DAS had the foresight to create a resource conservation manager position in which I served on and off for about a decade. The Department of Administrative Services avoided about $500,000 to $700,000 a year while I served in that role for sustainable operations. That's through energy savings and procurement efficiencies. DAS owns about 5% of the total state square footage. And I believe that state government has the potential to save much more if you take that 5% and multiply it out statewide. Much of the savings came from low-cost energy conservation and greenhouse gas measures in the 44 Department of Administrative Services buildings, including the development of a resource conservation management policy and establishing the framework to enforce it. For example, I tracked utility bills and followed up on anomalies, and we installed devices to monitor energy use 24 hours a day, and that led to a lot of that savings and finding things such as lights and air conditioning systems that had been left on weekends or holidays. Finally, it makes sense to move the state recycling program back to the Department of Administrative Services The state recycling program was originally housed in the department and moved to the Department of Environmental Quality in 2003 due to the fact they managed the recycling program for Oregonians in their homes and in businesses. However, over the last 8 years, it has not been as efficient to separate state government recycling program from the agency that writes policy for state buildings. DAS has the capacity to be more proactive in tracking data and updating practices. DAS already has a position to oversee the program's return and the duties assigned by this bill, so there shouldn't be a fiscal impact. I urge your support for Senate Bill 942 and would happily answer any questions.
Thank you. Louise, did you want to add anything?
So, Madam Chair, Louise Soliday, Director of the Department of State Lands. I'm just here to support Senate Bill 942. We are one of the agencies that was included in Executive Order 0303 that Governor Kulongoski issued in 2003. And we are in the second version of our sustainability plan. The Land Board actually approves our sustainability plan. It's a six-year plan. It's put together by a staff committee. We have a sustainability committee with the agency. And for us, sustainability means a variety of things, everything from simple things like me turning in a gas-guzzling station wagon that was my state vehicle to get a Prius when I first got to the agency, to directing that all of our copy machines be set on the default of double-sided so that you have to go through the extra steps to single-side copies in our agency, to managing the 2.3 million acres of waterways and land that we manage on behalf of school children and Oregonians in a sustainable fashion to make sure that we ensure that we'll be able to generate revenue off of those lands for generations to come, as well as to sustain the ecological values that occur on those lands under the public trust values that we manage those lands under. So we've got a very broad sustainability plan in our agency. We think it's really important. It does save the agency money. We've installed brand new boiler and air conditioner in our office building within the last couple of years, both of which are saving us considerable resources in terms of our energy bills. We have one more piece to do in terms of zoning our building so that we can control temperature in zones as opposed to maintaining the entire building at one temperature, and that's a project that we have planned for next biennium. But we believe very much in sustainability being a way that we can, in fact, save money for the Common School Fund and for other agencies, certainly can save general fund revenues for other purposes. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Madam Chair, if I may, I ask that the Dash 1 amendments be drafted. I believe they delete Sections 2 and 3 of the bill. I met with Paul Cosgrove on this issue. We need to go back to the drawing board and work with the board on this issue, and would like to come back at a further time.
Yes,
so.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So before I take questions, I just one question for you, Madam Secretary of State, which is I'm assuming that you've talked with our new or soon-to-be new DAS director to make sure that he is supportive.
Yes, Madam Chair, I've had multiple conversations, and I have a memorandum dated April 19th from Marjorie Taylor. It's my understanding that Department of Administrative Services and our new fabulous director, Mike Jordan, is fine with the bill.
Okay. That would be helpful to get a copy of that.
Okay.
That memo, if you can get it to our committee staff.
I can get it to you.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Any questions for our Secretary of State? Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Chair Dinkfelder. It says no fiscal, basically.
Madam Chair, Senator Thompson, the reason for that is that, in theory anyway, the agencies are supposed to be doing these actions already via prior executive orders. There were multiple executive orders issued under both the Kulongoski and then I think an earlier one under the Kitzhaber administration. So, in all intents and purposes, the agency should be complying with this already. Thus, there wouldn't be an additional fiscal impact to the state agencies.
I have a question then.
Okay. Are you done, Senator?
Well, just follow-up? As a follow-up, if we're taking out Section 2 and 3, and if you're already directed to do this, why do you need another bill to tell you to do it some more?
Great question, Madam Chair, Senator Thompson. I have found, first of all, executive orders can be repealed by future administrations, so this would put it into statute. And secondly, I think it sends a message to the agencies that, yes, sustainability is important and we want you to comply with this.
Okay.
And we will have a fiscal. We don't have the fiscal yet.
Okay.
On with the dash one. Is that correct?
Right.
Right. So we will have an official fiscal. I think you're just hearing that she didn't think there'd be a fiscal.
It looked like, I mean, if they're going to do some training and there would be some fiscal, but if they're doing that already.
And I'm assuming the fiscal statement will explain that when we get it.
I would hope.
All right.
Thank you.
I do have a question along the lines of fiscal. Well, you had mentioned that you'd replaced your boiler and new air conditioning. Do you include those items in fiscal?
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, they would have been included in our budget request in the biennium when we did that work, so they would have been included in that. It wouldn't be included in the fiscal in this bill because it's work that we've already done, and now we're reaping the savings from having done that.
Follow up. If with this bill you decide that the next building down needs to get a new boiler and air conditioning, would that be included in this fiscal? Would that be part of
the budget?
Part of the sustainability?
Madam Chair and Senator, also, I'm not sure I'm the best person to answer that question, but it would not be included as part of the fiscal of implementing this bill.
Okay.
It would be part of an agency's budget request to implement those actions.
Okay. Does that answer your question? Mm-hmm. Yes, and just to clarify, when we hear, at least I can speak for the Natural Resource Agency budgets, they discuss cost savings and efficiency as part of their budget discussions down in the Ways and Means Subcommittee that we're members of.
Which is fine, but when you go to the extent of probably $1 million to replace heating and air conditioning and zoning,
all has to be approved through the budget committee.
I understand that.
So, Madam Chair and Senator Olson, we spent nowhere near $1 million, so I just don't want to leave that number hanging out there.
Hopefully you save the taxpayer.
Our new boiler
dollars.
Cost about $80,000.
Well, good.
So. And hopefully that also there will be energy savings cost associated with that. That's sort of the point.
Yeah, we had an energy audit done by the Energy Trust and are implementing the actions that they recommended that get us the greatest cost savings.
Great. Okay, any other questions? All right. Thank you very much, ladies.
Thank you. We really appreciate your time and energy.
Thank you.
Anybody else that would like to testify on Senate Bill 942? If not, we will go ahead and close the public hearing on 942, and I will announce again that we will hold over the work session on 942 for Thursday, April 21st, and I will re-announce those all at the end so everybody can make sure they get that. So what I'm going to do next is reopen the hearing on Senate Bill 960. We have a few folks left over from last time, a few more folks that signed up, and then finally we will have the Department of Justice come up and talk about the amendment, if you're okay with hanging out for a little bit, Paul. Okay. So with that, we'll reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 960. Let's see. From last time, we had Patrick Capper, Dave Honeycutt, and Stephen Gaffori. This is going to be an interesting trio to come up together. Is Patrick here?
Here he comes.
Yep, Patrick, you're on deck. Okay. So this is a continuation of the public hearing from last time. And, yep. So I apologize that we had to carry that over. So, gentlemen, you're up. Whoever wants to go first.
I will.
I know you're not shy, Dave. Go ahead.
No. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, speaking, I think, in support, now that I've seen the amendments of the amendments to SB 960. It's not so strange that Kafori and I are sitting up here. If you're in this building long enough, you eventually work with everyone, and Stephen and I have a couple bills we're working together this session. So politics makes strange bedfellows, so here we are. My only concern with 960 and its with the amendments was satisfied by the statements of both Mr. Schlack and Richard Whitman, and that was that the bill not interfere with alternative methods that counties have, we think, under the current law, to authorize events in EFU zones. We've been working for the better part of 2 years with Deschutes County. Hood River County already has an ordinance that authorizes commercial events. We wouldn't support a bill that would overturn what the hard work that Hood River County has already done. Clackamas County, I believe, also has language that authorizes those, and we don't want to. We wouldn't. we were hoping to avoid having 2 years' worth of hard work by Deschutes County overturned at the legislature. And since Mr. Slack and Mr. Whitman both indicated that that was not the intent of the bill, then that solves our concerns.
Okay. All right. You done?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Stephen. Why don't you stick around in case there's questions?
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Kafouri. I'm here today representing the Oregon chapter of the American Planning Association. The American Planning Association is comprises land use planners, county planners, land use lawyers, private consultants. Our membership is very broad and represents people often in controversy and in conflict with each other on specific issues. We do come together, however, on policies regarding good land use planning. We have a rural policy statement that says that we support allowing farmers and foresters to practice their professions without undue influence from non-farm and forest activities. We also, at the same time, support reasonable activities on farm and forest land that is incidental, truly incidental to the main purpose of that land, which is farming and forest. Senate Bill 960 is a bill that we have been giving enormous examination of, and we find it wanting in all of the amendments that we have seen. I've talked to a number of you about this individually, and our suggestion is that this bill be put aside for the interim. There has been a number of work groups working on this bill. Unfortunately, these work groups have not met together. The membership has not been overlapping. So you have one group of people working, and you have another group of people working. There has not been one work group where all the interests have been together. We have never been part of the planned land use planners, never been part of any planning for any of this, for example. We're going to hear from some wine growers who are going to say the same thing, that their association has had some diversity inside and that diversity has not been presented to the legislature. So we would suggest that you put this over for until next year. 1055 doesn't sunset for another year, so we have that option. I've talked to folks at the Department of Agriculture who said they would be happy to host a work group. They have the expertise and the facilities that they could do this without a fiscal cost to their agency, and that's what we would suggest.
All right. Thank you very much, Stephen. Why don't you hang out in case there's some questions? We'll hear from Patrick.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, Patrick Kapper with the Oregon Association of Nurseries. This is a complicated issue kind of with our membership, as we have members that like to utilize the on-farm marketing aspect, but we also have members who are concerned about what type of activities could take place on property near them. So we hope that the final product of this bill can address those issues in a level way that looks at the interests of both. We did have some concerns with our members that currently are conducting activities on their land being now having to file for a permit and pay fines. Senator Thompson, we appreciate your question. It sounds like that's not the case, that people who are currently holding these activities can continue to do so. That was a concern, so I appreciate that getting on the record. Our other concern is the third tier permitting process. At this point, it seems overly broad and could potentially threaten the current definitions of EFU. I know that there's been some discussions about addressing that part of the bill, and we look forward to seeing any changes or modifications to that portion. So we will work with the other stakeholders as this bill moves and takes shape, and hopefully we can come to a consensus that works for everybody involved. So thank you for your time.
Great, thank you. Any questions for this gentleman? Questions? Okay. You are free to go. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. I'm going to ask Mary Stern and Mike Brandt to come up. Mary had asked to come because she was involved in the original work group. It looks like Art's coming back up.
If that's all right with you, Madam Chair.
He's going to hold up, man.
I was going to say.
I've never done this before.
Well, people come in front of you all the time, right?
No, it's different sitting on this desk.
Well, welcome.
And members of the committee, my name is Mary Stern, and I'm a Yamhill County Commissioner. With me, I have Mike Brandt, the Yamhill County Planning Director, and you know Art. I was appointed by the Association of Oregon Counties to head the Farmland Activities Task Force, or the FATF, as we lovingly called it. And I believe you've received copies of the report on two different occasions, so to save some trees, I did not bring you another copy today. Our task force included members from commissioners from many different counties, representatives from state agencies, many organizations, plus any interested parties could attend as well, and we took testimony and had discussion with everyone. The task force arrived at recommendations for a three-legged stool, which I believe you're all familiar with, and this was to provide tools to the county planners and provide some clarification on their authority. And I should note that it's optional for the counties to use this three-legged stool. The task force gave preference to farm use as defined in the statute, yet it supported economic activities that support farm use. And I want to thank Senator Thompson for taking our recommendations and moving them forward to the bill. I will say there was much gnashing of teeth and wringing of hands over the Dash 2 amendments. We were confused by those, and we've seen the Dash 5 amendments, and the task force, basically, we're very happy with the Dash 5 amendments. I know that there is some confusion out in the wine industry about where that leaves them, but we think this covers farmland, which includes wineries and others as well, the Dash 5 as they are now. If that's what goes forward, we do have a couple recommendations. You've split our three legs into four legs, which is fine. Legs A and B include references to health, fire, life, and life safety compliance. Legs C and D do not, and we would recommend or suggest that you would include those references with those two. And just also wanted to give you a heads up that our task force had a lot of difficulty in talking about agritourism and what that means, and it's used in the Dash 5 amendments, and we're willing to help you with a definition, but that will be a difficult challenge, I think. But we're here really to answer any questions that you might have for us.
Any questions?
You said Dash 5. Could you go over that a little bit, what those changes are?
Sure. The Dash 5 amendments look really the same as our recommendations that we brought to you. There's the one-time event which can either take a land use tract or a non-land use tract. Then there's a limited permit that would allow up to six events. And then the last leg would be basically going through a conditional land use process.
Any other questions? Any questions?
I have a question.
Yeah.
Our last panel, and Mr. Kafouri said that we had to put the bill aside and work on it some more. Do you agree with that?
If it's the Dash 5 amendments, no. I think that those represent a lot of work that went in with stakeholders from everywhere. We had planners involved in that from both urban and rural areas. We had the Farm Bureau. We had wineries. We had restaurants. We had Thousand Friends. We had state agencies. Who am I missing? We had lots of commissioners. And if he was referring to the Dash 2 amendments, I would agree and say the same thing. If he was referring to the Dash 5 amendments, I would disagree and say that, but I do believe that some work on the winery aspect must continue to be done.
Art, did you want to add something?
Chair Dingfeller, members of the committee, Art Slack with the Association of Oregon Counties. Senator Olson, in response to your question, the Association of Oregon Counties undertook the issue of events and activities on farmland because there was a myriad of court cases and issues that were befalling counties in terms of what kinds of activities and events were appropriate on farmland and what I'll call it mitigation measures, how mitigation in terms of the impact of the events could be provided to deal with compatibility with the neighborhood at this point. And you've heard about compatibility issues here. This is an issue that should be dealt with now. If it's not, these issues are going to continue to permeate, and we're going to see more court cases, and we'll just the fire will continue to burn at this point. And so this is a very good faith effort on behalf of Oregon's counties to provide the legislature, at least as far as the task force recommendations are, as a way to provide the authority and responsibility to manage these events. So I would say that 960, we should continue to work on it.
Mike, did you want to add anything?
Yeah, I did. Thank you.
Can you just state your name for the record?
Yeah, my name is Mike Brandt, and as Commissioner Stern said, I'm with Yamhill County.
And you're a planner?
Yeah, I'm the Yamhill County Planning Director. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say when I was asked to join the committee that Commissioner Stern talked about, I went kicking and screaming, and the main reason I went there was because she's the chair of our board, and she asked me to go there, so I went for that reason. But usually when I come and testify before these groups, unlike Commissioner Stern, who said she hasn't, I testify against legislation, and it's like we don't need the help a lot of times when people think that they're coming up with some new legislation. In this case, I saw this as an opportunity to provide local planners with additional tools that they may or may not implement. As Art just said, this gives us some more local control, and jurisdictions can choose to implement this or they may not choose to implement it. But I think it gives all jurisdictions an opportunity to at least take a look at this issue in greater detail from a local standpoint and put local effort into it, and that's why I'm speaking in support of it.
Mike, can you explain a little bit how, and maybe either of you can, if this bill moved forward, how would your county decide whether or not to, because since it's permissive, so how would they decide whether or not they'd want to adopt these standards or use your existing standards?
Well, I would defer to Commissioner Stern on that, but my preference would be that since we spend a lot of time on this and we have a lot of agricultural activities going on in the county, that we immediately begin the process of amending our ordinance to implement these changes.
And Madam Chair, I believe that our county would implement it as soon as possible. And actually, the last leg of the stool, the conditional use permit, has been a practice of Yamhill County for many years, and it's one that counties disagreed about whether or not they had the authority to do that. We believe we do, and so this would let other counties who have disagreed with that move forward in the same way we have. And I believe Richard Whitman, when he was director of DLCD, was in agreement with us as well, but there were some others out there who were confused as to that and didn't feel that current case law allowed them to go through that conditional use process like we did. The good thing about this is it will allow for the one-time event, either through the land use process or non-land use process, and then up to six events, which currently in our county now we allow three. With wineries, three events. So.
Does this dash 5, would that give you the authority to regulate the situation we heard last week about the winery that has constant weddings? Will this dash 5 give you the authority to regulate?
That's in Washington County, by the way. It's not in Yamhill. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
It's a lack of enforcement, though.
Yeah, I believe it would. And one of the reasons that I supported this is because that's ongoing in our county as we speak, not through any land use approvals, but I think this would give some of those venues an opportunity to come in and make application. And when I speak before winery groups in the county, when they find out there is a process that they can actually go through and it can be have a local input, and then we can measure infrastructure needs, et cetera, most of them are more than willing to go through that. So, like I said, I see it as an extra tool for planners and for the citizenry, actually.
One of the concerns that we heard, and maybe you could address this, and it just happens, I know this was in Washington County, but I'm assuming that you might have the same type of situation in Yamhill County, that is typically if there's problems, it's complaint-driven, Right. And do you want to talk about how you would deal with that in Yamhill County?
Well, if we, Madam Chair, if we did receive a complaint on any agricultural operation or anything for that matter, we have a code enforcement officer, and we go ahead and go through a code enforcement process on that. We, to date, I think we've had one complaint on an agricultural activity that people have actually filed a complaint form and had us go out and check on it, and we're in the process of going through enforcement on that right now.
All right. Did you have any other questions? Any other questions? Okay, maybe you can hang out. I think we're going to hear from some other folks from your county. So,
Thank you so much.
We may have some additional questions. Thank you. Okay, I have Jason Lett, who's also from Yamhill, and Pat Dudley. Is a former, in the former Department of Agriculture Board. Hey, Pat, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good. And I should say Pat's from Polk County, correct? Whoever wants to go first.
I don't, but thank you,
Pat. But she pointed to you, so.
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you so much for giving us some time to talk about this bill. It's been a real roller coaster ride for...
Could you say your name again, please?
I'm sorry, Jason Lett. I'm with the Irie Vineyards in Yamhill County. It's been a real roller coaster ride for winemakers to observe the 960 process. Both Pat and I were involved in the OWA work group that came up with some of the ideas for the winery definition, and were both very frustrated throughout that process at how much behind doors a lot of the important decisions seemed to be happening. And so we woke up this morning to see the Dash 5 version of this bill, and we're somewhat astonished because it really does take care of a lot of the problems that we saw coming forward if this were to go forward. We basically had to establish our judgment of this based on the product that resulted, not the process that went into it. I'm sure we could spend a lot of time talking about the process, but the product that came out of it was not one that we felt was going to continue our industry in the fashion in which, you know, we've come to be recognized around the world. With my sense of naivete about how the legislative process works, I'm not sure if the winery definition that was in 960 won't come back under some other bill. And so I know that it's probably not okay for me to address a hypothetical bill at this point. But I can only say that we would like to use the opportunity afforded to us by this Dash 5 amendment to, as a winery group, come back together again and try to come up with something that's a little bit more in line with what other farmers are allowed to do on their land, and to establish a fairer playing field for all wineries. So I thank you for all of your work on this. My remarks about the Dash 5 amendment as we have it now would only be that I have, as a farmer, a concern over the third leg of the stool, that what it is that counties can use as the yardstick to measure what is a conditional use is a little vague to me. It may have a specific meaning to a land use lawyer, but to a layperson, it's hard to see the sideboards that kind of guide a county in how it makes its decision on that particular process. And I think a period of study, especially on the third leg, as recommended by Mr. Kafuri, would be very welcome. And I think that's about all the comments I have, unless you have questions.
Great, thank you. Why don't we hear from Pat, and then we'll see if there's any questions. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I'm Pat Dudley from Bethel Heights Vineyard in Polk County. I actually was on the Board of Agriculture. My second term expired last September. And when I was on that board, I was chair of the Land Use Subcommittee. And we spent a lot of time working on what clearly to all of us was a need to fix the situation with commercial uses in EFU zones that had outlived the old statute and needed a comprehensive fix. And a lot of work was done. It was ongoing when the work group that was appointed for this that resulted in 960 was appointed. So, and I was also part of the committee that was Oregon Wine Growers Association appointed committee to deal with the fix to the problem caused by or solved by Senate Bill 1055, depending on how you look at that, that it was going to sunset and we needed to come up with something better to replace it when that time came. And also a member of the Willamette Valley Wineries Association work group that Jason chaired that was going to try to deal with what we perceived as being threat to the stability of the farm base for our industry, the success of our industry all these years. It's always been the land. It's always been the farms. It's not what you can do in your winery. It's how you can grow your grapes. And seeing our neighbors to the south in California, county after county, where the wine industry got to a point where it was no longer about growing grapes and it had become about entertainment and it had become about commercial activities not associated with farming. We were looking very carefully at some of those other statutes dealing with regulating non-farming uses in wine-growing counties in California. We made a lot of progress along the way. We are close, I believe, to having a good consensus in the industry and also within agriculture. I believe this is true. I know people are going to look skeptically at me when I say that. But I think that this process, this 960 process, as Jason said, has been a roller coaster. We got up this morning thinking we were testifying against that version of it that was here last Thursday, and all of a sudden the whole winery section appears to have been taken out of it. And it's very hard to know how to respond to that. And it just does feel that a little more time wouldn't hurt to get us all back together and iron out some of the difficulties that resulted in these ongoing amendments and changes that have been happening behind closed doors. Senate Bill 1055 is not going to sunset until 2013. We still have the sideboards in place, at least for the wineries, that were better than nothing. And to just throw all that out and leave us with something that is really rather vague here. Wineries are part of this. Whether we took the winery section out, we're still a commercial use in an EFU zone. And all of the potential abuses of the winery privileges still stand. As far as I can tell, the way Senate Bill 960 now looks. And so I'm just here to urge you to, if you possibly can, stomach it, to table it, and let us have hopefully one more year or 6 months, something more than a week, to work on a consensus.
And just to clarify, the Dash 5 amendments have not been adopted. So
okay.
They're just proposed and...
Okay. Well, it was hard for us to tell.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's,
you know.
That's there are many amendments that come out, and that's just how the process
right.
works.
Right. No, I understand. Thank
Different
you.
People write them, so they're not all under the control of the chair. Senator Brzezinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just I think I want to try to clarify the record and ask counsel. My understanding is if the Dash 5s, and I say if the Dash 5s mm-hmm. were adopted, mm-hmm. 1055 would still be in play, mm-hmm. so we still would have sideboards in place mm-hmm. if Dash 5s. I just want to clarify the record because I took your testimony to say that if the Dash 5s went, sideboards and 1055 go away, but there's nothing from what I understand in 1055 that does away with what is currently law for the next 2 years.
Yes, I believe that's correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you. Any questions?
I do have a question for Senator Brzezinski.
Uh-oh.
In reading the SMS here, it says that it repeals Section 3, Senate Bill 1055.
That's with the original, not with the Dash 5.
Okay.
So he was saying with the Dash 5 it wouldn't because the Dash 5 amendments, the winery portion is taken out.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So I was able to answer that one. Not an attorney either. Any
but
other
you're the
questions?
Chair.
Yeah. Right. Any other questions for either of these witnesses?
May I just make one more statement?
Sure.
Thank you. I didn't know what actual version of the bill I was speaking to, but I would like to say I would have had written testimony had I known for sure what I was talking about. But there were 40 letters from 40 letters from 40 individual winery people that we submitted last Thursday in opposition to 960 in the form we were seeing it then, and if that is its current form or whether it is or not, these letters keep pouring in. It's been my fax machine that's been accepting them. So I've been forwarding them to you. There are significant numbers of people in our industry who feel that this has been not given enough consideration and certainly not enough discussion amongst our own constituency. So I just wanted to add that. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Pat. And we have, I think we got them at the last hearing. And if you have any other, forward them to Beth Petrino.
I've been actually emailing them to you. Is that the wrong procedure?
That's fine.
Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Yep.
What would be a significant or a sufficient length of time to put this together perfectly or correctly?
Well, perfectly. I do think
he's
a week.
He's new to the legislature.
Or as close to perfect as possible.
Yes, yes, as a better a version, let's right. say. I think we would really appreciate a year till the next interim session. That would be great. I think a week is not enough. Because I really think the current framework that was kind of provided by 1055 is not the right framework for solving at least the winery portion of this situation.
So next February?
That would be great. That would be wonderful.
Thank you, Pat, and thank you for your service on the Board of Ag.
My pleasure. That was fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we have two other folks assigned up. Gail Kubley, am I saying that right?
Yep.
Okay, and I guess that's it, Gail. You're the last one.
I don't know if that's good or bad. I'm
oh, no. I shouldn't have said that. Okay. Thank you. And you came all the way from Ashland.
Yes. And I got to say, I am a little bit confused, I guess is okay. the word. Here.
And can you state your name for
yeah,
the record,
I'm sorry.
Please?
My name is Gail Kubley. I am a resident of Ashland, Oregon. I'm from the Flying Heart Farm and Farm Stand. How I come to be here right now, I guess started, I was going to make comment. I've made comment on the other House legislation, and I thought I trusted the legislative process until last Thursday, Friday, when all of a sudden there was a bill being discussed in the oral testimony that nobody in the public can even get right now on the Internet. The only way I got this is I called Beth yesterday. I got Dash 2 at about noon yesterday in Ashland. As soon as I read some of the language, I just went, nobody's speaking to the farm stand side of the equation here. We got wineries, we got more wineries. Nobody that I see is really on top of what the farm stand law said when they first changed it back in about 2005. And so if I could, I'm speaking to Dash 2. I don't even have a clue what Dash 5 is.
It's okay. They're all out there, so you can speak
okay.
to any one of them.
You know, like I said, I've been studying Senate Bill 960 for several months. I felt pretty comfortable with the way it was originally presented.
You're talking about the original bill before
one.
The dashes. Again.
And then in the oral testimony, I think it was Mr. Whitman started talking about how farm stands would not be allowed to sell wine. That was the one that really got me. And how did that come to be? Well, in the language that finally showed up in Dash 2, it changed the whole definition of farm stands, where always before it was a farm stand could be allowed if it's used to sell the farm crops and livestock. And they put in three little words, not including wine. We already have a permitted right to have activities at farm stands. It's in the law. Farm stands are allowed to have activities to support the sale of farm crops and livestock. That's already a granted right in the OSRs and the OARs. If I could, just a little bit of background here on the farm stand law. I don't know if you guys know how recent this was changed in 05. DLCD. I've been following it since 2005. It's a great law. It was generated out of the governor's office with the Brand Oregon concept. He asked Department of Agriculture and Department of Tourism, where are we lacking? And one of the things, if you look at other states, we are so far behind on the farm stand agritourism realm. And so that was the impetus of the farm stand changes. Prior to 2005, a farm stand could only sell what you had on your, what you grew on your property. The law was changed to help. The intent of the law, the letter of the law, was to help the Oregon farmers. And that's what that law was crafted to do. There was some ambiguity in what is the local concept, what is local agricultural area, and what is an ag product. DLCD addressed that in about 06. And I don't have it with me, but you can find this in the records of long discussion from Thousand Friends of Oregon and all the stakeholders commented when the OARs were written defining local and defining what an ag product is. I've got that in my files. Like I said, I basically stayed up all night getting ready for this. I drove up here this morning because the way it is written, three magic words changed what we have invested in, what we plan and are doing, and those three words were not including wine. It basically says a farm stand may be allowed if it is selling, I mean, I can read it for you, but it basically says if you're selling local farm crops and farm products, and then they inserted not including wine. Jackson County has allowed us. The state has defined it. I have letters from DLCD, Mr. Halliburton, Mr. Ebert, going back several years that I asked the question, how can wine not be an Oregon ag product? I got letters right here from them saying that, yes, by law and intent, wine is included in the statute and the intent of that law. Now we wake up with Dash 2. I don't even know where that language came from. My feeling is, and forgive me if I'm saying this, but the wine industry has not treated the farm stand industry properly this whole time. We see ourselves as another way to market their product. They see us as competition for the activities business. Seriously. And Jackson County, I think, has addressed this on a local level very well. When I have shared this Dash 2 with our county planners yesterday, they were dismayed, you know. And, I mean, I wrote them again in the middle of the night. I'm writing emails to these people. What can we do to change this? I come up here today, and now we're into Dash 5. I don't even know. I don't even know what we're talking
about. Just to explain, here's how the process works. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes there's multiple amendments, and anybody in the committee can write an amendment and submit it. Anybody
isn't it supposed to go on the computer almost immediately? Then?
We put them up there when we get them, and sometimes we get them like a day or two ahead of time.
Right,
and they're not always available to public, and it's a problem. And I've made that complaint
as a public person who's really involved in trusting the system. Its system has failed here. And that's where I guess my recommendations, I got off my prepared statement.
Well, that's okay. We're going to wrap up because I think we hear what you're saying, which is not making sure that there's...
The main two things I want to really address here. Mm-hmm. Number one is that wine is an allowed use by statute and by our previous...
At farm stands you're talking about.
At farm stands. It would be a taking from existing wine stands to remove that. I'm serious. I've talked to legal counsel. You would be taking something of value from the established existing farm stands by putting that Dash 2 amendment in there. Number two on that thing, it talks about, and I say it's kind of a devious way to exclude farm stands from events, but Dash 2 had language in there saying that you needed 10 acres in order to have an event. This is language right out of the Oregon Wine Growers Association's comments on House Bill 2344. You can take it verbatim about this 10 acres. Wineries are required to have 15 acres of vineyards. They don't use 15 acres to have a wedding or any of that stuff. So to put in the farm stand statute, there is no minimum acreage requirement, period. There isn't any. It's up to the county planners to identify what is a proper use on EFU. The statutes already tell that. They are already interpreting it that way. Now we come up with this 10-acre minimum. I have 9.56 acres. I'm under 10 acres. So it really affects me. I don't care if it was 2 acres. It still shouldn't be in there. It's apples and oranges because wineries need 15 acres of vineyards. It's not about their entertainment portion. You can have a wedding on 1 acre. You can have a farm education thing on 1 acre, 2 acres. See what I'm getting at? If the parking is there, if you're not impeding on the other neighbors, the health issues, the traffic issues, the safety issues, it's a permitted activity already.
Okay, so, thank you very much. Yeah. Are there any questions for...
First of all, I want to say this is a really important piece of legislation. And to be just rushing it through because we have to get it out of committee, the consensus stakeholders don't, I mean, the stakeholders do not have a consensus. The Oregon counties are split on it. The wine growers are split on it. Unfortunately, the farm stand people, we don't have a lobbyist. We don't have an association. We're a growing industry.
Actually, the Farm Bureau, do you want to have the Farm Bureau come up and respond?
Come on up. Actually,
and then
we're
kind of. So can you respond to, since we have the Farm Bureau right here,
sure.
You may want to address some of that.
Feller.
And then Steve McCoy is up next because we unfortunately left. He was signed up, and we had meant to call him up. So.
Pardon me. Chair Dingfelder, for the record, my name is Sean Cleave, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. I'm sorry, I couldn't remember the gentleman to my left's name, but he does bring up some good points. I will say that the reason the language regarding wine sold at farm stands came into play, and I'll be the first to say that maybe there's some unintended consequences of adding that language, but the concept is that if you do a wine tasting room, that you should do that under the wine the winery statute, and not be allowed theoretically to do a tasting room and a farm stand that functions as a tasting room. So this would, the intent of the language, while maybe not executed as eloquently as even the Farm Bureau would agree to, would be to just say that rather than doing two tasting rooms on one farm, that you would use one provision of the statute for a tasting room and then otherwise for the wine stand. There are producers that do a variety of other alcoholic beverages sold at farm stands. That doesn't seem to be the problem here. Perhaps that language I would admit should be modified, but it was my interest as part of the work group to provide one pathway rather than multiple pathways without necessarily harming a producer's ability to sell a product that they produce on their farm.
Okay.
So I hope that's helpful.
Any other questions? Yeah, Senator Prezonsky.
I just want to flesh this out a little bit about the farm stands and the sale of wine. So, and the wine that you're selling at your farm stands, is it from coming from your farm, or is
at the present time we have a vineyard? We are not we don't have any winery license. We don't have any of that. We are in the stages, and it's permitted use, and we're expanding our farm stand. There's other people in Jackson County that, I mean, basically have documentation from our county planners saying it's a permitted use. And we're marching down this road.
All right, fine. So let me follow up with another question. Are you required to have a license from OLCC?
We will have, yes, no doubt about it. Okay. As you're a retail, and they treat you as a... Let me back up here a little bit. There's some other...
No, that's fine. That's all I need to know.
And the other thing, just to clarify this, and I know that the Farm Bureau is well aware of this, this legislative language, no matter what amendment, is permissive. In other words, your county would have to adopt that in order for them to have that as part of their ordinance. If they chose not to adopt it, their existing audience ordinances would remain.
There's no grandfather clause anywhere to be seen in this, where some of the other bills that are going through the legislature have, in other words, if you're existing as of a certain date, you're good. We're not. This bill doesn't seem to have anything that says existing wineries or existing, it does. Actually, it talks about existing permitted wineries. But the farm stand is just sort of, nobody talks about it. Local foods aren't talked about.
You want to respond, and then we're going to go on.
Senator Dingfelder, for the record again, Sean Cleave. The testimony that was provided over the last couple days regarding this piece of legislation was very clear from the governor's office and other members of the working group that currently permitted activities would not be affected necessarily by this legislation. So it's my belief, based on reading the legislation and the committee record to this point, that nothing in this bill would prevent a county from saying that this gentleman's permitted activity at his farm stand is not currently allowed under their interpretation.
Okay.
I will also say that there would be a slight difference between operating a tasting room where you are in the business of opening bottles and providing tasting and doing direct marketing versus selling a ag commodity at a farm stand where occasionally the practice may be a tasting. So there would be a distinction there. And that was, again, the intent of the Farm Bureau, to provide the distinct paths for one activity versus another.
Okay. Let me just comment real quick about this blanket exclusion of wine at farm stands. In other words, the way Dash 2 is written, it's just period, no wine at farm stands, you know, is not including wine. And that takes away a lot of other things. Events like farm-to-fork dinners always have wine with them. We're doing those. So if you say you can't sell wine, you've just eliminated yourself from farm-to-fork dinners, possible weddings, and any of those things. That obviously part of the deal is wine, local wines, local foods. So that's where I see. And also it gets into this, the wineries are being allowed to have, for instance, my permit actually says I can have a tasting room. It's right in my permit, a wine tasting room.
All right, thank you. Any other questions?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sean, regarding your testimony regarding the intent of the Farm Bureau regarding a tasting room versus a wine or a farm stand, did I understand it that the choice was, there was no other choice? If you have a tasting room, you should go under those ordinances or statutes and be prohibited from having a second one on site that would be at a farm stand, which I'm assuming would be away from the tasting room, down maybe close to the road or something like this?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Prezansky, you're correct. That was the conversation as part of the work group, that particular piece, as I said, wouldn't necessarily be the exact language that the Farm Bureau would choose, but recognizing through the conversation of the work group that having a statute that would provide two paths for the same intent that would essentially mean that two types of commercial activities would exist on the same plot of land, theoretically, was something that seemed reasonable to address in this legislation, and that was the language that developed.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. We have another witness that we'd like to call up. Thank you both gentlemen. Steve? And then we are going to adjourn this public hearing, and we still have one more. Actually, we're going to open up a work session for the purposes of talking about the amendment. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Sorry about
That's okay.
Oversight.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, for the record, I am Steve McCoy with 1,000 Friends of Oregon, testifying in opposition to SB 960 as introduced as the -2s and as the -5s. Our concern is conflicts. Conflicts on farmlands between events and activities and agriculture. It was mentioned earlier that 1,000 Friends was at the AOC work group. We did attend those meetings. We did submit written testimony at those meetings. However, our voice was not heard. None of what we submitted was actually acted upon. We were not a voting member. We were not a member of the work group. I wanted to make sure that was clear. Our largest concerns, I think, the concern that is with all three of the versions of the bill, with introduced -2 and -5, is the third leg of the stool. We're concerned that it does allow unlimited events on farmlands. This is exclusive farm use land, not commercial land. The question was asked, could this bill be used to stop Garden Valley? And the answer was yes. This bill could also be used to permit garden vineyards, the one that has been trouble in Washington County. The other things we're worried about in the introduced bill and in the -2, we're worried about the 25% cap. We feel like it is unenforceable. The different standards that exist for events at wineries and for everybody else. To be clear, there are certain things that happen at wineries, whether they're tastings, barrel clubs, those sorts of things. And wineries should be able to do those on site without having to get a permit. However, whenever they start doing other types of events, then they should be held to the same standard as everybody else, if they are doing weddings on site, for example. And the Dash 2s and the introduced bill did not have that. We also felt like the Dash 2s allowed a full-service restaurant at every winery in the state. That would be a tremendous concern. Wineries, restaurants already exist in the UGB. This would be pulling business away from restaurants that currently exist out into the countryside, and that would be a tremendous concern. We feel like agricultural land should remain in agricultural use, that agriculture is the second biggest business in Oregon. 1 in 8 jobs in Oregon are agricultural jobs. 15% of the state's domestic product is in agriculture, and we are concerned about the impacts that this would have on agriculture, on nearby agriculture. I will now take questions.
Great. Thank you, Steve. Any questions for Steve? Nope. Okay.
And I apologize. I also have written testimony that I forgot to hand to her.
Okay, so great. You can submit that.
Yeah.
Okay, so with that, I think we've got everybody that was carried over and new people signed up. So we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 960. We're going to carry over the work session on Senate Bill 960. I will open up a work session on Senate Bill 941 and just for the purposes of discussing Dash 3 amendments, and ask Paul Garahan to come up and review the changes from the Dash 1 amendments. We don't have the fiscal on this, so we will be carrying over the work session. Thank you, Paul, for your patience.
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, Paul Garahan, Oregon Department of Justice. The Dash 3 amendments are the same bill with just a few exceptions from the Dash 1 amendments that were before you when the Attorney General came and presented this proposal to you, this proposed legislation to you at your prior meeting. And the changes here, as you'll recall, this bill does a number of things, and one of the things that it does relates to the criminal enforcement of environmental laws provision. In the prior legislative session in 2009, there was the change authorizing the Department of Justice to use its protection and education account funds to fund a criminal prosecutor to pursue environmental enforcement. And that is underway, and one of the concepts related to that bill was to provide for any criminal fines in those actions to be returned to that Department of Justice Protection and Education account, so that the concept was at least somewhat helping to fund the work that was being done there, the fines produced out of those actions. Unfortunately, the language that was adopted at that time did not reach that end. The changes in the Dash 3 are to Sections 2 and 3, and if you look at the Dash 3s, there actually now is a Section 2 and also a 2A, 2B, 2C, and then a Section 3. The bill in Section 4 on is identical. The Dash 3 amendment is identical in Section 4 on to the Dash 1 amendments. There are a few technical changes to Section 1, but the heart of this is changing Sections 2 through 3, and that all relates to the mechanism to have the courts actually be able to order to have those fines that are imposed in these actions returned to the Department of Justice account. And it relates to the particular approach and systems that are used by the Oregon Judicial Department, what the court clerks use, how the judges are making the order. And essentially, the approach here is to treat the fines in these cases the same way that restitution and essentially the courts, we believe, will now be able to handle a fine in this case, treat it on the same par as restitution orders are treated, and in that way they have a spot on their form that they can fill this in, and the money will actually make it back to the Department of Justice Protection and Education account. I can go into more details on exactly how we achieve that, but that's the essential
difference. Well, why don't I see if there's
any
questions, because I'm not sure. We'll see if folks have any specific questions. I think that's probably fine, and then they can read it, and then on Thursday they'll have a little more time before then to digest it. So is there any questions for Paul on this? No. Okay, on the dash three, so this will be the one that will be before us on Thursday. I can ask you to, Paul, if you can come back on Thursday just in case there's any additional questions, I think that will be helpful.
Madam Chair, absolutely. Thank you.
Okay, so with that, I will go ahead and close the work session on Senate Bill 941. Is that correct?
Yep.
And I'm just going to repeat for the record all the work sessions that are being carried over. There will be this is on Thursday, April 21st, and we've already posted the agenda, but we'll be updating it to make sure it's accurate. There will be carried over a work session on Senate Bill 688. Work session on Senate Bill 829 will be carried over. The work session on Senate Bill 536 will be carried over. Work session on Senate Bill 82 will be carried over. Work session on Senate Bill 960 will be carried over. Work session on Senate Bill 941 will be carried over. The work session on 942 will be carried over, and the work session on 945.
One second.
Make sure everybody's got that.
Is that all?
That's it. Beth?
Three. That's correct.
All right. So I had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Mm-hmm. Yep. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. No, I don't know where you got 10 from. We moved today. We moved several of them.
Yeah.
All right. I see 805 went away.
Yeah.
805 went away.
862
and 9. Yes. 9. And did we say 942? We got 944. 688. We're waiting for the amendments. 960. We're not carrying. Working today. 829. We're carrying over. We did 862.
Okay. I got 8 now.
Yep. We're all in the same 8. Everybody. Okay. So with that, any other questions? Before we adjourn. And with that, we are adjourned until April 21st, our last day to do Senate bills.